You're listening to the Modern Producer Podcast, expert talk on livestock housing and animal husbandry. Get ready for today's episode.
Hi there, this is Kevin Kerbis, and I'd like to thank you for joining us for another episode of the Modern Producer Podcast. First of all, let's just acknowledge that right now we're all experiencing extra stress. There's no doubt that COVID-19 is changing everything around us. These are definitely unprecedented times. However, one of the best things we can do in times like this is to stay positive and find the good and the humor in things around us. Back in December, which at this point seems like a lifetime ago, we did an episode with Matt Booth called Staying Positive in the Tough Times. If you have not yet listened to that episode, or even if you have and need a refresher, I do encourage you to go back and check that one out. There may be some points in there that seem even more important or relevant today than when we recorded it. The other thing to remember in these challenging times is that what we do as an industry remains important. We are all part of providing a safe, healthy, and reliable food supply chain, and the need for that is clearer now more than ever. We all have a shared responsibility to not only do our jobs right, but also to make sure that everyone out there understands what we do. So for this episode, we had Tim sit down with a couple of people from Pipestone Vet Services who work in their consumer relations department. I guess that's just another fancy term for what we call advocating, or to put it even simpler, they just go out and talk to the general public about the hog industry. I'll let them tell their own stories about what they do and have experienced, and I hope you find some joy and humor in this. We also hope to bring you more blogs and podcasts soon that may help us all cope with our new reality. And as always, if you have any subjects that you would like to have us cover or stories of your own that you want to share, please reach out to us with those. Take care of yourself and enjoy this episode of the Modern Producer Podcast.
Well, welcome again to another edition of the Modern Producer Podcast. I'm glad you could join us today, and we really appreciate those who decide to listen in. Today, we're going to be having a conversation with a couple fine ladies from Pipestone, Sylvia and Alicia, who work with the Pipestone. Now, you guys can correct me when I'm wrong. Not the town, but the vet services with public relations, I believe. So let's get them right into it today. And you guys, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourselves and give us a bit of background on what you do.
Thank you. Sylvia Walters. I work for Pipestone, and I'm currently in the public relations role. I've been with Pipestone for over 20 years. In the last 5 years, been doing public relations, consumer outreach, and in that arena.
Okay.
Alicia Mogler. I've been with Pipestone for almost a complete year in May. I went to school at South Dakota State University for ag communications degree. While I was doing that, I interned Pipestone in the public relations department, and now I'm full-time.
So, Sylvia, give us a little more background. You've been with Pipestone quite a long time. You've come up through more of the production side.
I have been involved in all aspects with Pipestone. In 24 years ago, I was doing procurement and clinic management of our vet clinics for the Pipestone Vet Services side. And throughout the years, I've grown as the pig production company grew. So the pig production company of Pipestone is Pipestone System. And my first stocking startup, assisting products, all that kind of thing, was with Buttercup. And that was 20 years ago, and now we are, and that was the fifth farm. Today we are on farm about number 78. So
quite an increase. Have,
right. And so prior to that, involved in, owned a grocery store and a cafe in a small town in South Dakota. My husband worked in, managed a gilt multiplier farm in South Dakota. I'm a Washington State University graduate in swine production. So grew up on the farm out in Washington State. So farm kid at heart.
There's pigs out in Washington State?
There is not. That's why we live here now. And so, yeah, I grew up on the farm, spent my entire life and career helping pigs and people, and now I'm and coming to the end gate of my career in just creating that relationship between the farm and consumers and others who are not so lucky to be here.
Sure. And Alicia, you've grown up in this area?
I grew up in Iowa. Okay. Grew up on a Nuita Finish farm in Iowa.
Okay, okay. And you said you went to, okay, correct me if I'm wrong, but South Dakota State, did I?
Correct.
I like to say I pay attention.
Go Jacks. Yeah.
Well, they didn't go so far lately, have they?
No, I think they're both out.
Yes, we're just coming out of Summit Tournament for those who are listening. So now you both work in more public education, or maybe being a bridge between producers and the public who maybe are disconnected from their food sources. Where do you guys all get to, and how do you get your message out? How do you actually interact and interface with the public?
So our main event that we do is during the summer. We have 9 different, we call discovery barns, at different county and state fairs. At these events, we have sows giving birth. We have piglets there. A couple of the barns, we have cows giving birth, chicks hatching, chickens laying eggs, and a bunch of other different displays that kind of help bridge the gap of what we do on the farm.
Okay, so it's not just pig or swine specific then?
A couple of them are. Okay. But our bigger ones, it's all the species. Sure.
That actually raises a question. We'll jump back and forth here a bit, but with all of the challenges with biosecurity these days and live pig interaction, do you guys see any issues, or how do you address those, perhaps having live pigs and maybe, or do you just lose a sector of people like the farmers who might not come in because of it?
So you address a number of topics there. So the last one you mentioned is farmers and biosecurity and their farms. Mm-hmm. So we have obviously live animals in our space. And if they have animals, pigs at home, then they are our producers that we're there representing. And so they're going to observe their biosecurity principles as they have set for their farms. So yes, some producers may not visit us, and some of our own employees cannot, because it breaks biosecurity.
Okay.
The majority of our visitors are not from the farm, and that's our goal, is
sure,
to get
sure.
to reach those. And so the challenge there is to make sure that none of them are compromised by our exhibits. And so in order to do that, we make sure that the pigs and any of the animals that we bring to our exhibits come from a healthy farm. We've monitored the health there. We make sure that they are current and have all their vaccinations, that we can make sure that we don't have any issues with unhealthy animals being in the public. And then in our exhibit spaces, we promote cleanliness, so those spaces are spotless. And then with the interaction, we want to encourage interaction with the people so that they have a comfort level with what we're doing. But we want to make sure that when they do it safely. So we're not letting them kiss the pig or put the share, you know, binkies or you know, stuff like that. We want to make sure that our educators there are promoting the safety of our visitors as well.
The animals and the visitors.
Correct.
Okay. So it's kind of a calculated or an accepted risk, in a sense that you're taking it out there, but it's important. There might be a biosecure risk. Those who feel it might be, you won't just come into the building or near there, but you want to interface with the public as much as you can.
Absolutely. And we provide hand washing stations, sanitizers, all those sort of things. And then also have the opportunity to share with mostly moms or dads that are holding infants, like that, why it's not a good idea to have your baby kiss the pig, you know? And so those things, and they're teachable moments.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Okay. So It's you said, Alicia, 9 events in summer, is it?
Yes.
9 specific events, then, I take it.
Yes.
Which ones do you guys all get to?
We go to the South Dakota State Fair, the Sioux Empire State Fair, the Lyon County Fair, Pipestone County Fair, Clinton County Fair in Iowa, Buchanan Fair in Iowa. Help me out.
Sorry, we don't have a list in front of us. It's mostly a couple state fairs or regional type events, and then the county level And I'm assuming that you're open to more if somebody else wanted to say, we would like to have something like this and it's a big enough event. Do you expand your where you go, or are you fairly static in your approach?
We will consider it. We are, as of last year, we're an N of two. Okay. It used to be an N of one. And so we have to be cognizant of what we can execute and execute it properly. And we're not want to go into a space or expand into a place that we can't do it right and give the right message. Okay. So are we open to expansion? Yes. Are we going to expand everywhere asked? No. We will help and coach others do it as well. Okay. If you have someone who's passionate about it.
Well, that leads to the question then, do you have affiliated or partner organizations that you might tag team or team up with to increase your exposure and message out to the public? So who would you?
Exactly. I work closely with Minnesota Pork, South Dakota Pork, so other events and things that they may bring onto the playbook. Other areas, other fair boards, other farmers that are in their local counties have approached us and want to say, okay, I will take over this event. Will you help me? Show me what to do. Well, we've already invented the playbook. We'll just share it.
So you can provide materials, yes, that they might need, brochures, different types of signage or guidance. Then. Okay.
Correct.
Sure. What is the general response you get when you're out on these events and you get the mother coming in with her infant or the family wandering through? What is your most common response that you expect to see?
Well, a lot of the people that are visiting our buildings are three generations removed from the farm, so they really haven't seen any of the live animals up close in person. So it's kind of eye-opening for them to see. And then if they are there when the birthing process happens, it's very eye-opening for them to see how fast it goes and how well we take care of our animals.
Is there almost an aversion to seeing some of that? Does somebody, you know, take a couple steps back, like, oh, that's just a bit too much information?
That has happened. We've had a couple pass out.
Oh,
we
really?
We've had, actually not the fathers.
Let me guess, the fathers.
No, they were young. Yeah. Really? And not from what they were seeing, but more actually for standing there for such a long time with their knees locked and, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden it was an emotional whatever and tip over. But
So do you have catchers or is
it? Yeah, we have spotters.
Really?
We do watching, pay attention, because that we want to make sure we are reading the reaction of our guests as well and answer any questions. You can tell by a lot of people's facial expressions and their body movements about how they're accepting what they're seeing. And for us as communicators to be able to take that opportunity to join the conversation in their head on their terms, sure, it is where we want to go.
How often, like, I don't know how big your displays, sure, are. Like, how many pigs do you normally have on a live display?
It depends the size of fair we're at. So, like, the Sioux Empire one, we'll have three there.
Okay.
A lot of the smaller county ones, we only have one.
So, it's pretty much luck of the draw whether she's happening to be farrowing right when somebody's there.
Correct. We have a pretty good, we're pretty fortunate in our choices, but about 80% of them will farrow during a viewer experience. So we've been lucky with that. But obviously Mother Nature's in control.
Yeah. How do the kids respond with that?
They love it.
They will wait all day for it to happen.
Really?
And they have such good questions. And it is my favorite time. Everyone who works with us it's their favorite time because we're sharing an experience that others don't get to see. And then so many parents' responses or grandparents last year is funny about, wow, you just did a whole bunch of education I didn't have to deal with.
Oh, yes, I could imagine that. So you just alluded to a last year's story. Is, mm-hmm, it something you're comfortable sharing a story?
Oh, certainly. A grandfather had his grandson there and was waiting. He waited like 3 hours to watch a pig be born. And for the time everything was going on. We'd had 3 hours of conversations asking about all kinds of stuff, how the piglets got there, how they were in the tummy, how all of these things happened. And then the pig was actually born. And he goes, it came out her rear. And I was like, we've been standing here watching her rear for 3 hours.
Where else would it go?
But it was supposed to come out her tummy. He thought it was going to come out of her tummy. And it's, okay, here's the umbilical cord. This hooks up inside of her tummy, and that's how it gets fed. But to actually come out to this world, you have to have an orifice to come out of.
Yeah, there has to be an opening. How old was he?
About five.
Okay,
about of course, five. Yeah. And so that happened in September. In November, I am at a SDSU Daktronics Open wrestling, college wrestling event, and I'm sitting in the bleachers on and off, whatever. And finally I get a tap on the shoulder from behind me. And the gentleman says, hey, my grandson is bugging the heck out of me. You got to tell me, are you the lady from the fair? And the little boy there is there. His grandson's visiting again from California. And his grandson says, I told you, Grandpa, it was her. It's her. She's the pig lady.
So you have a lot of fun with.
We do. You know, we do.
It's a fun job.
Do you have any fun stories like that, Alicia, that you've seen specifically?
Oh, I don't even know. Probably something I just can't think of.
Well, if it comes to you, feel free to jump in with that. With the kids, I guess let's start with the kids. What is the most expected or common question that you know you're going to get from the kids?
When were they born? And how many girls, how many boys? That's the number one question.
And from the parents?
Can they stand up? Do you ever allow them to get up or get out?
Okay.
Pen. Yeah, more adult questions.
The welfare side of things.
Right. And for you, our ag community, that is an important aha moment for you. We, as ag communicators, we are so passionate about what we want to do, and we want to talk about a lot of things, about the science, about how good we are, how this that happens, and how these things happen. And when really the kids are asking, is it a girl or a boy? What do you call a girl pig? Hmm. Are all girls pink?
And why aren't the boys blue or what?
and because a boy came out that has red spots on it, yeah, right, or something. And so they have very, very basic questions. And so for our audience, and as they communicate, whether it's the Thanksgiving table or at an expo event or anything like that, you got to remember your audience and what's important to them. And when we talk about things that are important to us, it really doesn't mean something in their world.
No. But with the adults now, you're getting less of the basic questions and more of the welfare related, I take it, because if they ask, do you let them get up or move around or anything? How much of that do you see where that is front and center on their mind? How are these animals treated?
I would say from a question perspective that we get asked, it's very low that they ask. So of 10% of the people, the adults, will ask or make a comment about that. Is it on their mind? Probably 80-90% of it. So we take this opportunity to answer the questions they aren't asking in a method and terms and level that they can understand.
When you broach that subject, even if they haven't asked it, but they're thinking it, what do they usually open up then? Do they usually ask follow-up questions? Do you get an opportunity then to expand upon the subject?
Yeah, once you start the conversation with them, they're going to have an idea that you're there and you care, so you're going to have a conversation with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that works.
Is there, in that vein of thought, is there a lot of people that come through to see the animals but then give you some sort of feedback, well, I don't actually eat meat anyway, or is it mostly people who understand that eventually, like kids aside, some of them might get it, but do the adults make that connection and are okay with it?
I think so. I don't think I have my experience, I haven't had anyone who, maybe a couple handful of people that say I don't eat work for so-and-so reason.
Okay.
And sometimes you have to agree, disagree with them.
And we will have some that will make the comment, oh, they're so cute. How can you possibly eat them? Or after seeing this, I don't know if I can eat bacon again because they're so darn cute. And things like that. But that gives us the moment to say and interject and bring it full circle that God gave us these animals for our sustenance. Mm-hmm. And I feel very privileged to be the caretaker of an animal that is ultimately going to give their life to sustain mine.
Sure.
And so that is an important thing that we try to message across.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I was just reading it earlier today or yesterday that pork is one of the most well-balanced protein options out there. Do you get a chance to get into that level where you start talking more or less about the pig and more about the nutrition that they actually bring to the table, or does that not get into the discussion much?
At the Discovery Barns, the locations that we've been speaking about mostly here, we don't get a lot into the nutrition because we're talking about animal care and that kind of thing. But in our work, we do more than Discovery Barns.
Okay.
We do things we call oink outings and then classroom visits and cooking things and that kind of stuff. In those places, we definitely go to the food and the health and the where to utilize the protein that's provided.
And I'd like to get into that more, but before we get off the Discovery Barn side of things, you see a lot of these cool and fun reactions, but what is your most, what is on the flip side, what is the most common misconception that you run into? And we're getting a couple.
Yeah. Blank stares here. Misconception is about family farms. The people, the general population wants to or thinks of a farm and a farmer as being a red barn, an old guy in some coveralls, six pigs running around, and a cow. But they don't put the connection in order to get enough pork chops to supply you and your summer grilling event. It's not going to get raised. It is not raised in that manner. And so that the larger farms of today that you'll see around South Dakota, they're quite large, and people will want to call them a factory farm or a corporate farm or what those kinds of names, which we take offense to because we think they're talking in slang, but they're actually owned by families and farmers, and that's what they are.
Exactly.
And so that is the biggest misconception, that size is bad. And if we want to put it in one phrase, size, the large size is bad. And that is a huge misconception. And that is a very hard concept for them to grasp.
And how do you actually deal with it when you see that misconception being vocalized, or at least you sense it's there? How do you speak to that?
Mm-hmm. So the fact is that 98% of the farms in South Dakota are farmer-owned, family farmer-owned, and that is a fact, looking up anywhere. And so while some of these farms are large, I understand that it feels big, but it is also owned by a family. It's not owned by a publicly traded business. Mm. Now, if you want to look in comparison, think about another business that would be in the private sector that is family-owned, but large. If you want a family to succeed and their kids to come back and work for you, you can't stay at one size. You have to grow and expand to expand your family in their farm.
Is there an openness to that explanation, or how?
In general, yes, and guarded, because they don't 100% trust and feel it. Now, I personally can deliver the message pretty easily and genuinely, because my husband, and I will tell the story if I get somebody that's like, it's, I can tell is going to challenge it. I can tell you, my dad lost our farm in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
My husband and I loaded everything that we owned in the back of our pickup in Washington State and drove to the Midwest and went to work. And we started working. And when we came to, we worked for Pig Improvement Company. And then when we came to work for Pipestone, and had saved up enough money to be in ownership opportunities and do that kind of thing, it grew us to now we have personal ownership in more than five sow farms. We own our own weed-to-finish barn. We have our own family farm of 150 acres where we live. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't have bought more than a cheeseburger on the day we drove out here.
Yeah.
And so does large help? Yes, it does. Yeah.
So you can personalize it, and I'm sure that connects or helps connect a lot. Do you see a real advantage that there is year over year? Are we getting through? Is the message getting through? Is there things we can be doing better as an industry, maybe with the Discovery Barns or other things in this vein? This whole idea of you had used the term, it's escaping me right now, but some sort of advocating, I think we've used in the past. Is there more that can be done? Is there something we should be doing different, or are we on the right track?
I think there's always room for improvement, and with our producers, to if they have the chance to talk to to people in their communities, volunteers that volunteer at different events that they normally don't, just to partake in talking to the consumers, because the consumers are taking what they're learning from social media, and that's not all the time true. And so we as producers need to do our best to tell our story and what we're doing.
Sure. So you'd like more producers to be engaged?
Correct.
In public events, in social media, and both in some targeted collaborative approach, or even just one-on-one on their own Facebook, Instagram, Twitter pages?
I think everything to help. Farmers are the best ones to tell their story because they're the ones that are doing it firsthand. They're experiencing it, and so they're the ones that can tell it exactly how it is.
And to add to that, the farmers are only 2% of the population. The other 98% are the consuming part of their products. So to be able to actually do that, to be a one-on-one conversation, is physically impossible. So what can we do? Are we doing the right thing? Honestly, we don't know what we don't know. We do know what we're behind. Mm-hmm. And so whatever you can do, do it. If you're not comfortable as a farmer, I would like to energize and enable all of your audiences that are farmers to do something, get out there, whether it's in their own family, in their community, like Alicia said, or if you're not comfortable doing that, get out your checkbook. Help things like South Dakota Ag in the Classroom, Groundworks, other programs that are taking bus tours and to farms and doing things that are promoting agriculture in the schools. And so the kids at the fourth grade are getting an impression of agriculture before they've made up their mind, and then can also help influence their parents.
Is there such a thing as bad messaging or a bad way to approach it? Have you seen... Oh, you're smiling, so you've got something to tell us. this is good. You know, is there things that shouldn't be done because they're actually hurting, not helping?
Yes and no. I want to say the ultimate trust comes from transparency. And so we have to be, as farmers, transparent. And that includes dirty laundry and all. Mm-hmm. And so you can't be kind of transparent and be trusted. And we need to earn our social license to operate through trust. And so is there bad messaging? You tell me that you live, I don't know, but if you're married, has every message you've ever communicated with your wife been good? And And so how do you come back from that? So we are going to have that happen sometimes, and there's going to be things that, oh boy, we could have said it differently or should have or whatever. But I would err to the side of engage rather than not, you know. And if you engage inappropriately, we'll deal with it and figure it out. You know, there's counseling for everyone.
even aside from messaging out into the market, in relationships in general, yes. Let's move on to that. You had mentioned some of the education into the classroom, and I know you had mentioned Groundworks as well. I've heard there, I heard of them before, actually might have interacted a bit. Tell me more about what, other than the Discovery Barns, what else do you guys get into for education for the public?
Let you talk about oink outings.
Okay, so we go to estimately kind of minimum around 12 different oink outings, as we call them, like Sylvia said earlier. And they're basically the expos that you see around. So the latest one was like the expo for her that people aren't expecting to learn something. And so we're there to tell them what we do and kind of something that they're going to learn and take home from. We do a couple of those. We go to different events and put up a booth there. What's some other ones we've done?
So look for spaces that aren't farmers and okay. that we're not talking to ourselves. So the Washington Pavilion Ag Awareness Day is coming up here. That's a big one. It's at the Washington Pavilion. We'll have about 3,000 people in one day. We bring a piglet and some chicks and have the conversations about agriculture. And we have a little scavenger hunt and a quiz game and things like that. So they actually take something home from that. And the other events, like I think you were, she was at Wine Women and Baseball on mm-hmm. Sunday up at the Twin Cities, places where your people are coming for food and fun. Mm-hmm. And here we are playing bags to wit about pig trivia questions at Pork Palooza, for okay. instance, here in Sioux Falls, sure. things like that. So we are inserting ourselves into areas outside of agriculture that we would bring our basic message and open up conversations that we wouldn't have had from anyone else.
So you actually do something at Pork Palooza there?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mental note here. I'm going to have to get Garrett to sponsor yes. us now. But you don't. Obviously, with this one in Minneapolis you had mentioned, you don't target just even affiliated. You're going into any kind of public outing where you can get space then if it's a good fit.
Right. We'll look around. We look for audiences that would be ones that we would have an opportunity to impact and that are not farm audiences.
Sure.
So we're looking to some of those spaces. Whether, quite honestly, right now, as availability and time, it is part of the decision factor.
Sure. You know,
it's we're an N of two, and
yep.
do we have the time?
Yeah.
So where we go, and then you know who asks us to come as well to some places, sir.
So you mentioned Groundworks as well. So what do you do specifically in the interaction with, or is that just an affiliated?
Groundworks is the group that is spearing up, overseeing, and revamped, honestly, like totally revamped, the South Dakota Ag in the Classroom program.
Okay.
So if you were familiar with South Dakota Ag in the Classroom more than 4 years ago, it is night and day different from what it used to be. They have launched it into a STEM certified.
Okay, which expand yep. on that right away.
So it meets criteria for some of the learning benchmarks that they do in classrooms. So they have to be science, math, technology, those kinds of things, criteria have to be met with their learning programs.
Okay.
And so they have a curriculum writer that has taken agriculture topics and made them STEM certified.
Okay.
So quite a few schools in South Dakota actually have been able to take out their social studies program and insert South Dakota Ag in the class.
Oh, really?
And okay. so now that was a huge win for South Dakota Ag, because now the social studies curriculum in those schools is actually, it's a road trip. It's a South Dakota road trip where they go around South Dakota, learn about the towns in South Dakota that are historically relevant, and then also about the ag and ag products and what brought that town to the map. Oh, in nice. South Dakota. And teachers can interact with it. We do webinars. We have videos that are coming online for them to use. So it's really got some robustness coming to the program, as well as penetration into the fourth grade classrooms.
And Groundworks is a South Dakota specific organization, or am I getting that wrong?
I am not qualified to answer that. Okay. I do know that this Groundworks is here in South Dakota. I believe they are affiliate. There is maybe a parent company, but a parent affiliation. But sure. They're also Groundworks does other activities other than Ag in the Classroom. They do the teaching gardens.
Yep.
And they do the Youth Eating Smart summer camps. And then we've got a teacher credit class coming in 2021. It will be like a two-day attendance thing for teachers to get. They'll get credit for it, sure. Continue ed credit for it. But it's all about agriculture and connecting it to the class.
Is there other organizations that we haven't mentioned yet in the classrooms, sure, or different things that you guys have do work with?
Oh, there's quite a number of organizations out there. I'm thinking of right here in Ag United. Ag United does, okay, a lot of outreach education-wise. There's a lot of bloggers that do some stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Food bloggers as well that have come in on the ag and weighed in on the ag side. There's travel across the country. There's more in other regional areas that do more regional stuff, okay, like Ag United. So,
shifting gears only slightly then and bringing it back inside the walls, do you guys do producer education to help them get better at assisting you in messaging? So,
yeah. So before each of our fair seasons, we have a couple training sessions that people that are helping, they're volunteering to help with us at the fair, can come in and spend the morning with us kind of talking about what we're going to be doing and how to deliver the message.
Okay. So you do work with producers now on that's before the fairs perhaps, but on an ongoing basis, if somebody says, how can I get better at,
right,
my social media presence? How can I get better at just messaging what we do? How can I get better on my own or doing it myself? Where do they go for these resources?
In my experience, their best resources is their state pork organizations or their state soybean or whichever entity that they're most affiliated with, and ask for media training, ask for social media training. Those organizations do host some trainings throughout the year at different places, different times. You can pick up webinars, seminars at different expos, at the Pork Congress, at Soybean Council, those kinds of corn growers. Those kinds of things is where I have looked to find help, okay, and learn. Pipestone, for us, we haven't hosted anything that's specific and ongoing for that. It's kind of a hit and miss deal. We definitely do it for our trainers to talk how to talk pigs to people,
sure,
but getting better at that, there's a need, absolutely.
The question itself assumes that there's farmers and producers who come wanting to do this, but I'm assuming there's probably a larger contingent of our industry that just would rather be left alone. It's the nature, mm-hmm, of who we are, rather independent. How do we get some people off their duff and get them more active?
Well, you are correct in that the South Dakota farmer that has grew up on the farm is personal and private and is going to stay that way. And getting them off their duff, challenging. But what really is working, I think, well, is that we have a whole crop of young students coming out of South Dakota State and other universities in the ag communication sector, in the ag marketing sector. Adopt one, okay? I adopted Alicia.
So that's where you came from, Alicia?
Yes, right.
Okay.
It is. And so I encourage those kids, those young new graduates coming out, they're going to have a paying job. So they're going to need to go get a you know, ag marketing or ag communications job, if that's their thing. But then encourage them to seek out a mentor, a farmer mentor. Some of them came from the farm, but not all of them. And not all of them have a broad spectrum of farm, mm-hmm, background. And so go meet some guys and ride in the combine and, you know, get somebody on your side that you can message and say, hey, how does this work? Or what's the, sure, deal about tiling? How come this guy told me that tiling was bad? know, yeah. And then just look at, and then if these farmers, if you would like respond and take in one of these young communicators, you can be their backbone. Let them be the voice.
Sure. That's still assuming that they're thinking about it. We still need, I think, how do you get them to actually realize that this is important? How do you actually move the average guy who would just rather be out in the tractor or in the barn?
I understand. I hear that. But unless they're living under a rock and they're not looking at today's news, they understand why there's a need.
Yeah. I guess, yes. So almost everybody you talk to understands that there's a need. A lot of them are not sure how to even begin.
Absolutely. And that's why I'm saying, you know, I could list 10 of them in 2 seconds about, yeah, I'm too old to learn the new trick, and I'm not going to be very good on a mic. But you know what? You can sure coach up a nice young person that is new, fresh in their career.
Well, I'm not one to talk. I resisted going in front of a mic for quite a while, and well, finally I'm here. What else have I forgotten to ask about? Obviously, you guys work day in and day out on educating the public. What else should we be talking about? What else should we be focusing on that I've not even thought to ask you about? I'm not that good that I thought of everything, trust
me. Well, I want to put the message to our farm community and the guys, the gals that are out there doing it every day, to focus really hard on doing it right. Because we need to be transparent. And if you are maybe off the edge a little bit, fix it. Because we won't be able to have our trust if we can't have transparency. And if you asked me earlier about, is there something we shouldn't share? No, because everything should be shareable. Okay?
Right.
And so think about your daily actions or whatnot. And when you're loading pigs or you're doing this or doing that, all of a sudden, if you go, whoo, you know, that's not a shareable moment, then let's rethink how our shoot's set up or how whatever, okay? Yeah. So let's move towards the best possible transparent activities and raising of our animals and our crops.
So you're saying if ever you think, I'm glad nobody saw that, don't do that again. Find a way to do it differently.
Figure it out.
Yeah. Because somebody someday might.
Absolutely.
Right.
I give my some of my people the analogy that in my house, it was an open door policy. And if my kids' bedroom door was closed, I assumed it was not good.
Okay.
So no closed doors. Make sure they're open. And make sure that anybody can walk by and view your bedroom.
That's a good way of looking at it. And I think unless I'm missing something, that probably is a good point to wrap it up. I guess, is there any kind of promo or plug you'd like to give for yourself, more so ask guys to get their checkbooks out again, or what, how can we help? Go ahead. Here, you got an open mic right now. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. Thank you for asking us here to be part of this. We really have our hearts in spreading the transparency factor in farming. We believe that we are here to produce a good product for healthy food for people. And it just breaks my heart when people don't trust it. Whatever you can do to help that message and to move that forward, from any farmer's perspective, whether it's with South Dakota Ag in the Classroom and other states and Ag in the Classrooms, other areas, please do that. Just please make it. And if you see an opportunity or say, gosh, I don't know how to do that, reach out. Reach out to your pork organization. Reach out to your corn organization and whatever, and put the bug in somebody's ear.
So you're saying either open your checkbook or open your calendar and make either some time or contribute, get out there, get involved.
Absolutely.
And it's not that difficult if you just seek out the opportunities. Now, of course, when we wrap up and post this this podcast, we'll try and get some links off of you guys, maybe some helpful stuff that we can put out on social media as well and different avenues that they can go to. But I think we'll wrap it up for today. I do appreciate you guys coming in and sharing all that.
Thank you for having us here.
You bet.
Well, thanks. Really appreciate the opportunity.
You bet.